In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Well, all right, y'all. All across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer Cali. So if you're keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. And I'm with my homeboys, of course.
Big J.
Yeah.
And we have some legends in the building tonight, man. We got Brad Jordan, a.k.a. Scarface, and Mr. Willie D. What's cracking, fellas?
Hey, you know, too blessed to be stressed.
For sure. That's right. Thanks. What's good, family?
Oh, shit. You ever heard that? You ever heard that song by the Commodores, Easy Like Sunday Morning?
That's right.
A sheet.
Sure, I feel you, man. You know, there's so many ways we can start with y'all, man. Y'all done legendary shit, man. And y'all really is like some of the founding. Y'all really like the founding fathers, kind of like, you know, y'all right up there with the founding fathers of gangsta rap, dog. Y'all brought a different edge to it, though.
I wouldn't take credit for that.
They music, it was what it was. It wasn't no pretendo shit. It was like some real gangster shit, like for real. I could be that nigga. You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't take credit for it. I wouldn't take credit for being like the founders of that gangster shit, man. But we did come in at a time where, you know, it wasn't very much real shit being spit. So, you know, it was NWA, Ice-T, 8. Me and 8 did a record together back in the Gap and Cube. You know what I'm saying? So them was the fathers to us. The forefathers right. of that gangster shit, man. Let a motherfucker know that you can say, you know, whatever needed to be said. And that's what we did, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, y'all coming out of Houston, Texas, man, y'all brought a different angle to it, man. When I first heard y'all motherfuckers, I was like, God damn. Some killer motherfuckers in Texas.
Yeah, you know what it was? It was like it was a lot of bottled up angst, right? You know, it's like every ghetto, it don't matter where you live at, you're going through You're going through a lot of the same issues. You're going through insufficient living. You're going through insufficient love, insufficient, it's a lot of insufficient food, you know, insufficient money, you know, just insufficient living. And that right there alone, you know, is enough to make you lose your damn mind, and just you're going to either lose your mind, or it's going to crystallize your mind and your way of thinking, and it's going to make you get out there and go even harder. That's why, like most of your great basketball players and football players, them dudes come from the hood, because you know the hood got them ready for the NFL before they even got to college to play ball or whatever. Man, you remember you had to play hot ball and shit and run through the whole damn team.
Exactly. You had to play murder ball in the damn street on the concrete and shit to get ready and shit for shit exactly. Like that, man.
Exactly. You remember that, man? We used to play football on the concrete before school started.
Exactly.
In the parking lot playing football on the concrete. So you take a dude like that and you put him in the same arena on the same field or the same court as some dude who basically been fed with a silver spoon, and what kind of results you think you're gonna get? He gonna look like a freak of nature to that dude. Because that dude don't understand that not only do we have his own personal aspirations and whatever, but he has this because he's thinking, man, I can actually break the generational curse with my talent. I can actually lift my whole family up out the hood with my talent. I can take my neighborhood and put my neighborhood on his back and take as many of these cats that I grew up with along for the ride. That's a lot of responsibility. We going into these situations, whether it be music or sports or whatever, you know, with the idea that, man, we got a lot of people to feed, you know, and we teenagers and 20 something years old with these type of responsibilities and at least, you know, having these type of thoughts, but we feel like we're obligated, you know, to look after everybody.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, you talked about the community factor. I saw that you guys have both ran for city council. Do you know, one of the things we always talk about in this show, I think there's a need for that. And I always wonder why folks that's not from the community aren't the ones up there at the top. They know what's going on in the community. They know everyone in the community.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm talking about not just the councilman, but from the city councilman, the mayor, the police. Those should be people from the actual community.
A big part of it, that's a great question. A big part of it is that we live in a society where people like to remind you of your past. And if you have a past where you may have, you know, got into a little trouble or whatever, well, we know politics is a dirty game and they're going to use that past against you. And another thing is that we don't want to be seen as hypocritical. Like, wait a minute, what do you mean you stand up here telling people to do the right thing? You didn't always do the right thing. And we get caught up in that, in those type of moments, and we listen to people who don't want to really see our communities evolve. And a lot of these people look like us, but we don't see it because we just see color. But a lot of times, it's the people before we can get to the white gatekeepers, you got to get past the black gatekeepers. And a lot of the black gatekeepers would be the main ones to throw your past in your face. Seeing that they see you trying to better yourself, you talking about you talking about cleaning up the community. You talking about, hey, don't sell drugs to our people like that. Don't be doing drive-bys. Don't be sitting where you lay your head. You start talking like that. They say, no, well, what about when you did this? Or what about when you did that? And that right there is what prevents a lot of us from sharing that information.
When you start, when you're running for public office, see, here's the reason why I ran for public office. I wanted to make a difference in the community that I was born and raised in. Okay, I've been all over the world, bro. And when I come back to the neighborhood that I was brought up in, it should still look the same. Like, we're not progressing. We got a decent mayor, and he's not hearing what we need to move forward. You know what I mean? Like Houston is the fourth largest city in the fucking country, right? And two of the biggest entertainers in the world come from here, Travis Scott and Beyonce, right? But we don't have we're not set up for entertainment, and we should have been set up for this shit, y'all. We should have been shooting movies here. It should have been a tax credit given to these people, man, that shoot movies, so they come down here and spend some of that money and advance our fucking economy too. You feel me? You know, you need forward thinkers in that office downtown, man. As long as you got these old-ass gatekeepers, like Willie was saying, you got these old-ass black gatekeepers down here that's afraid to take another step and move forward. You know, they play that go-along, get-along, go-along, get-along game. Shit, I'm not for that shit. I'm for the advancement and the empowerment of my people, man. And that's probably why they didn't want to fuck with me. Because they knew I would have been real serious on that mayor's ass about getting some shit in our community for our youngsters, man. Something for our youngsters to do. Because 90% of our youth ain't gonna go to college, man. They don't have the money. The economy ain't set up for our kids to go to college. So why not give them some money to do trade shit? I can't tell you to stop selling dope or breaking in people's shit without offering an alternative. You see what I'm saying?
It's real.
All that shit they doing, that, like we still stuck at a standstill now. And the councilwoman that they put in place, you know, I don't see nothing. I don't see nobody going to trade school. I still see fucking illegal dumping. I don't see nothing put in place for us. You know, everybody in there trying to get them some money, but we cool. Me and Willie, we cool. We already got some money, so we want to see our neighborhoods advance in a sense. You know what I mean? I want to see my neighborhood move forward and get out of this shit. Get out of the slump that they putting us in constantly, man. Why is the money not trickling down into our neighborhood? That fucking pisses me off.
Yeah, it's too many people lining their pockets.
All right.
There's too many people lining their pockets, and me and James talk about that all the time. You know, you brought up a deep thing. You brought up trade school. A lot of people talk about college, and I'm for college. I got a son to play college football. He's at USC right now. He's starting corner. And I'm all for college, but that's not for everybody. Every kid that's out there is not meant to go to a four-year institution. They just don't have it in them like that. But they do have trade school alternatives. You got kids out here that like to fix cars, that like to build shit that's good with their hands. Put those kids in the trade school.
Imagine this. Imagine you leaving out of high school with a certificate, man. That way you already ready. Mm-hmm. So you can go and work in, these places, man. You can go and be a welder. You can weld in the ocean. You know what I mean? Like I was set up with this place called what's the name of that place, man? God damn. They gonna kill me too, man. The Longshoremen. I was with the Longshoremen.
The
Longshoremen was like, thanks, man. We wanna back you. We back you 100%, man. And just let everybody know that if they come out here, we're gonna pay for them to learn how to do this shit, and we're gonna give them $250,000 a year. You know, depending on how long they want to be out there in the ocean. But I'm just saying, my grandfather was a master plumber, okay? So I'm a strong, strong, strong advocate for trade, bro. I'm a strong advocate for trade.
Okay? You have to have it. Because
you know,
I was talking to my step pops the other day, and he was talking about, you know, he owned two trucks. He owned two semis. He drove cross country. Always was an owner-operator. He told me that they call him every day, and he's 72 years old. That means that these young dudes ain't stepping up. They either don't know about it or don't have a way in. And I know he made a
but
good.
But do you blame that? Do you blame that on us being uneducated, though? Because a lot of niggas be uneducated about a lot of shit.
I mean, we can't say undereducated. We can't say that. I mean, we can say not knowing. See what I'm saying? Like, ain't nobody just stepped out and say, hey, look here, young. We got I got three fucking trucks out here, man. All you need is a CDL and come get in. All you need is a tank car, come get in. You know, you want to work offshore? Come on, man. Like, we work with our hands, y'all. You know what I mean? Like I don't, like, the college institution, man, I'm with you on that, man. Okay, college, you want to go to college? Come on, let's go to college, man. Go be an accountant. go be a doctor, go be an attorney, whatever the fuck you want to be. But for those who grew up with the grandparents or grew up in the house, in the household, that the income was, you know, $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year, you don't have that kind of money to go to college, bro. It's a fucking $100,000 to go to college.
Well, here's my stance on college. This is what, you know, my daughter just passed the bar, so she's a
lawyer. Graduated from NYU.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
She graduated from Fordham. But my son, in New York. My son is in business school in London, right? So my son and daughter, you know, we sent them to college because, you know, not because they needed that, but we wanted them to have options. They had other dreams and aspirations. I ain't never want my kid to do what I do or try to pressure them to do something. Life is about access and options. If you think about your own life, anytime you had access and you had options, you always seem to be a little happier, right? When you have access and options. So I sent my kids to those schools to go get the information and come back with it and then use it against them. That's what I sent mine in there for, to go infiltrate, go get the information. But they got the option if they want to use that. If you want to go work for somebody, that's fine. But I did not send my kids to college with the idea of them going to beg somebody else for a job, begging somebody that we know that don't like us for a job. That's we got to make sure that we get over that notion when we do. If we do send our kids to college, we got to keep that in mind, that we can't be sending our kids to school and expecting them to go do all the right things that they're supposed to do, get their degree, and then go beg these same people that we complain about every single day that are discriminating against us, hating us, and hating on us, and trying to suppress, you know, our movement. And we can't be relying on them to give us a job or to give us a promotion or to help our lot in life. We can't do that. We got to start building, creating jobs before our kids enter the job market. That way they don't have to go begging somebody else for a job. Mom and dad already took care of that. We got that covered. So if you want to come and work in family business, you can. But if you want to go do your own thing, you got that option. So we got to start. But the first option number one should always be the family business.
Exactly. And I'm a strong proponent of that, because the thing is, I know some people that's doing all right in life, right? But everybody I know that's really rich, that really got money, they work for themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know no billionaires that work for somebody. I don't know no millionaires that work for somebody. And I'm pretty sure it's a few of them out there, but they few and far between.
Yeah. And if they do work for somebody, they're the CEO, they're the CEOs, the COOs, you know. They're at the top. They're pulling the purse strings. They're calling all the shots. They're writing their own check, basically.
Exactly. Because I know James talked about it a couple of times. Of actually, you know, building a trade school. Like, you know, you got universities. Building a trade school for guys that's probably like just fresh out of 12th grade, you know, fresh out of high school, don't have no options where they can go learn different trades out there, because there are ways to make money out there besides standing on the corner, because that hustle is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, standing on those blocks is dead and everything. And I blame it too, Will.
What happened to the – didn't they used to do that in high school and offer that? You wood shop and machine shop and building cars and all that. Yeah, so what happened? Well, they just started snatching those programs.
Here's what happened, A. They sat back and they said, these Negroes don't need us. They got trades. They're not coming begging for jobs for us. They're starting their own businesses. They're being self-sufficient and independent. So what do we have to do? We're going to squeeze them out. So since we can't squeeze them out of the job market, they're not coming for us for the job. We can't squeeze them out of the job market. What we'll do is we'll just put the hammer down on them and ride on them, set these traps out here, whether it be the dope trap or whether it be some other kind of trap. Get them the okey-doke, some kind of way. We bring them in. You know, maybe the trap is domestic abuse. You know, maybe the trap is, you know, you are you you had a dispute in the neighborhood or whatever, and you slap somebody or push somebody down on the ground. Next thing you know, you got a record. So what I'm saying is that ultimately the idea is they want our bodies warm or cold. They'll take it warm or cold. Since they can't make no money with us with the trade, see, they can't make no money with us because we realize we can do our own thing when we got a trade. We don't need them. So they say, well, we got another way to get you. We'll get you before you ever even need it. You can even use that trade.
Yep.
We'll set these traps out there for you that you fall right on into it, take you over to this prison system, and we'll get your ass to work for free. Yeah, we'll get you to use that trade, that experience, whatever little experience that you did, gang. We'll train you, your trade. In fact, we're going to take the trade out of the school and we're going to put it in the prison.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's cold-blooded, man.
That's definitely.
So now you're using the trade. So now you got a trade. Now you got a trade, but you're making 5 cents a day. You know, you make it 37 cents a day. But you got a trade. You can use it, but you're going to use it with them. Mm-hmm. And that's the game. So that's why as black men, we have to go above and beyond to stay out of their way. We got to get out of their way by all means. We damn near got to be perfect citizens in this type of structure that we're living under. Because the goal for them is we are a target. They want our bodies cold or warm. They don't care about us. They hate us. They want us dead. They want us in the prison. They want us sashaying around like a woman. That's what they want us to be. They can either way, they can control us in any way. None of these, if you're in jail, you ain't no warrior. If you're dead, you ain't no warrior. And if you run around here acting like women, you ain't no warrior. So
boy, look at here.
So they got us. So that's why BET can run that play that play that they played, because it's bigger than just, oh, I want to do what I want to do. I like this person and this person like me. Why can't we just show our affection? No, they are trying to destroy the black man in every single possible way. And if they can destroy the black man, they can destroy the black family.
Oh, for sure. And I always talk about that. I'm going to tell you something, Will. The welfare system has crippled our community. It has crippled our community because I'm going to tell you, I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm going to tell you, the house, the people I grew up with next door, the mama was on welfare. Now guess who they're? The same kids that I grew up with. Y'all still over here? They on welfare and got kids. That's what they do. They get together and pool the money. And what do these white folks tell the people? You can keep getting this money as long as you don't bring no nigga in here to lay up with
long
you.
As long as that nigga ain't
man in the house. You out of here. You out of here.
That's some shit.
But now that we know that, it's on us. See, I'm going to tell you one thing that I do believe that all of us as human beings, we have a right to complain about something. If something bothers you, you have a right to complain, but after you complain, do something. And it's too many of us that just complain, but don't do anything after we complain. As men, I think it's unmanly to complain and don't put any action behind it. I think it's unmanly. I think it's unmanly to not be a warrior, to not be a protector, to not be a provider. I think it's unmanly to lay up on a woman and expect a woman to take care of you. I think that's unmanly.
You know what, Willie? Let me say this. If we allow the system to continue to spoon feed us, then we're gonna always be in the same condition that we in, you know, forever. You see what I'm saying? And you know, we want the right to do this. We want the right to do that. Why the fuck do we still have to ask for a right to do some shit when it should already be granted anyway? Why in the fuck are we still, you know, dibbling and dabbling with this voting bill and shit? Why are we still fighting for the right to vote? You know, why every, you know, few years or so, you know, it come back and we got to ask for the right to vote again? You feel me? Like, this shit is getting fucked up, y'all. We got to push the button.
They got to keep it that way to keep us in place. If
they can't keep us in place because they're already afraid that we're growing in this country and black people shouldn't be where they are.
And Mitch McConnell is a Mitch McConnell is the biggest piece of shit in the Senate, y'all. I don't know if y'all pay attention to politics, but he's the biggest piece of shit in the Senate, y'all.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's a whole bunch of
He might be the biggest piece of shit, but all of them assholes.
Yeah, all of them is, man. Ain't none of them good. It's like, you know, one thing about it, they about the, you know, they keep getting on Trump about this tax stuff, right? And I thought about it. Taxation in itself is a it should be against the law. It's horrible.
It is.
You know, when they first came over here, you know, to America, whatever, and settled it, right? Wasn't that what they left England for? Them trying to press them with the money and stuff. Then they turned around in the 1800s and did the same thing again because it's time of war. You're only supposed to take taxes when it's time of war. That was a thing to support the war, but they kept it going because America has managed to keep herself in a state of war since then. Around the world, we somewhere fighting, so that allows them to keep taking our money. You think about it. I'm gonna ask all y'all this. Will, how much have you paid into the Social Security system?
I'll feed the system in that.
Brad, how much have you paid into the Social Security system?
Millions and millions of dollars, bro. You know why? Oh. They take that money, they take that tax money that they get from you and they advance some of that money to your Social Security.
Exactly.
Every time I get
paid, it's something going to Social Security.
But check this out though, right? I looked at some shit the other day and it says that through my life, I've already accumulated enough credits to retire, right? But I'm not allowed to retire. I thought it was 60. I looked on there. This motherfucker says 67. Okay.
67 years old. Yeah.
So I retire at 67 years old. I don't gave these people almost a little bit over $500,000 already, right? I don't gave them all this money. I retire at 67. How long? How much longer am I? Let's keep it 100. How much longer past 67? Am I going to live 10 years past 67? If I'm lucky,
I think average for a black man is like 73, so you got 5 years, about 5-6 years after that.
Man, that's a whole lot of cheese game, left y'all. Over. Now, that's question, Will. What are they going to do with that money? Now I kill over, I pass away. Are they going to cut my wife and kids a check and say, here you go, your father was an honorable man, here's the rest of his money? No, where did that shit go? It's all a con game, man.
Yeah. Money go back into the pot.
And we can't beat it.
They go back to the pot, but who's going to be the person? It's like, you know, we sit up here and talk, Will, and I don't like talking, man. I'm about action like you. What can we do about this shit? We don't have no real strong leadership in the community, man. There's a lot of shit that's really just going sideways.
I take issue with, like leadership, like black leadership, like saying that we don't have leadership. And the reason why I take issue with that is because if we focus on a leader, anytime we have somebody, we can say, that's our leader. That's our leader. When they kill the leader, they take out the leader, then the movement dies. And see, this is our movement. This is why every time we get a movement going, everybody get on board, we say, okay, we got our leader. And then they take them down, and then the movement just dies. So every single one of us have leadership in us. We are capable of leading. We just, those of us who are capable, I won't say all of us are capable of leading because all of us are not capable of leading. But many of us are capable of leading, and that's leadership all around us. It's just that the people that are leaders are not, you know, raising their hand and saying, I'm the leader. You know, that they're not, you know, like, you're a leader. These people, everybody right here, I'm talking right now, leader. You know how I know y'all leaders? Because I know a little bit about all y'all. I know a little bit about all y'all. And everything that I've seen about y'all told me that y'all was a leader. You know, y'all not followers. Everybody on here is not followers. Everybody kind of moved to their own beat of their own drum. That's leadership. And we just need more. We need more individuals to assume their role.
You 100%
right. Yeah, and you know where it starts to. And, you know, just to get behind what Will is saying, man. I think that we need to control that vote, man. Once we control that vote and put the right people in place to make decisions for us, this shit will start going a lot different, man. Right now, we really taking the vote for granted. If you get a motherfucker like Willie D in the office, you're going to see some changes. You know, for like in office, you're going to see some changes, man, because it has to be.
Will they allow that, though? Face, will they allow that?
I mean, but listen, hey, they're going to have to allow it, or they're going to keep going through the shit they've been going through. You got motherfuckers in there that's been sitting in Congress and Senate for 50 years, bro, and they ain't did shit but sign their name on some shit or pop up at a motherfucking funeral, dog. That's not leadership, bro. Leadership. We continue to take it for granted. Like we take it for granted. Like, yeah, I'm going to go and work for this company, man, and I'm going to make me, you know, $55,000, $60,000 a year, and the person behind me ain't got no fucking job, but fuck him, I'm cool. That's not how we should be looking at things these days, bro. We should be looking at, man, okay, I got a job that's going to pay me $60,000 a year, but how do I get the next man on so he can take care of his family?
Now, that's what I'm talking about right there. That's our answer. The answer is group economics. That is the answer. Once we build our economic system, then you run it. This is how you run it. If you ain't got money in the United States of America, you ain't running nothing but your mouth. You got to have money. Money, run it. Money, run it. So you
money.
This is why in every major city in America, you have these Asian communities that before they became Asian communities, they may have been mixed communities or predominantly Black communities or whatever. And, you know, you ride by and the street is called Bel-Air. You come through there a year or so later or one day, and you just ride by and the street is called //
Tic Tac. Chinese spot. You
know, you didn't hear no news story about changing the name of the street. They didn't have to get anybody to march with no celebrities came out with no special announcement. They just changed it. You know what that that's money. Money did. Money make things move. So we got, and a lot of us, we got the money, but what we're not doing is pooling our resources and reaching back to grab even more people and teach them the game. You know, a lot of times people say the game is sold, not told. No, we got to tell the game, you know, because we said that too. The game is sold, not told to an extent. But a lot of this game needs to be told in order to bring our people along. Those of us who are seeking that knowledge, that's thirsty for that knowledge, we got to give them the game. We can't afford, we don't have the luxury of not giving them the game. We out of here, bro. We at war. We in trouble. We in trouble. And it's all hands on deck. We don't have the luxury of not sharing the knowledge. We don't have the luxury of tapping that little youngster that might be a little wild and everybody's scared of him. We don't have the luxury of not stepping to them and just trying to show them a different way. We don't have that luxury.
I think the problem is we don't talk about, like what I'm hearing right here, we don't hear that. We don't hear people talking and saying we need to get this back into schools and all of this. We need to educate these young kids, because there's a lot of Black men out there that have no clue, that only believes in what they see and what they do. You see what I'm saying? So just like you said, we got to get out there and relay this message. But some of us don't want to hear this message. Some of us believe that there's no way that Black men or Black people can come together and make shit happen.
Yeah.
We tear each other down, is what I'm saying. So we got to find ways to build each other up. Our self-esteem, pretty much everything, because when you hear a Black man greeting another Black man, "What's up, my nigga?" But then get mad when the white man say "nigga." But what about, "Well, how you doing, my brother? What's up, Black man?" We need to greet each other in a different kind of way, because we are stuck in something that we have no knowledge or belief in and understanding when these people are feeding us the other bullshit. You feel me? So what I'm saying to you is we need to grow. We need to understand and educate our mind. It don't have to necessarily be in a school, because street smarts to me is the best smarts.
No doubt.
If you can understand the shit that goes on in the streets, you can come in a classroom, you can go to work, and you can spill that knowledge right there. Like we're doing here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So what black men need to do is understand what Scarface and Willie D is talking about, what Norm Steele have to offer, what MC8 is saying. You know what I'm saying? Our life history, the way we've been living as black people, a lot of black people don't care.
Yeah. And here's the thing about that, James. Everybody ain't gonna make it, bro. One thing about us is that innately we're loving people. You know, we are forgiving people, right? Innately and historically, we are a forgiving people. And this is why we always, and we feel like everything should be fair, right? This is why we take on a lot of people's causes that don't take on our causes. We see something happening to another race or another group of people, and that ain't never fought for us, they never stood up for us, and that's not fair, that's not right. And we just automatically waving that flag. We just riding for them. That is because we got this concept that things are supposed to be fair. No, look, it ain't about fairness. It's about bending another person to your will. Bending them to your will. What is it that you want? What is it that you need? They must comply. Ain't no asking. Stop asking people in power to share power. They're not going to share it, power. They didn't ask to share the power. They went and took it. So you got to take power if you want power. And everybody is not going to make it. Some black people out there, they are coconut. They look black on the outside, but they white on the inside. But they can get by a lot of times because what they would do, and it's some of them that are on these social media platforms who are masquerading like social warriors. They out here acting like they're really for the people, but they really not. And this is how you can recognize, this is the easiest way to recognize them. If your criticism of the black community outweigh your contribution, you're a motherfucking coon. There's a whole lot of them. All they do is talk shit about black people. All day long. They might throw you off a little bit. This is what's confusing. Because this is what they'll do to get you on their side. They'll be like, they'll say a couple of things that's true that everybody agree to. Like all people say, yeah, that's general. Universally, that's true. For instance, you know, black people need to, they need to stop with the black on black crime. Everybody like, yeah, man, that is, I got a problem with that shit too. Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. Everybody like, yeah, right on. Well, you know, there's a lot of, black people that selling dope, and we got to stop selling dope. Why you sell dope and get mad when you go to jail? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, stop. Yeah, man, yeah, that is true. And then they'll go light on a few things that are right, that are universally right, that nobody can dispute. And then they go top heavy on throwing black people under the bus. Textbook Candace Owens. Textbook Stephen A. Smith. Textbook Charles Barkley. All of them, they go top heavy on their criticism of the black community. They'll say something that's right. They might say, well, not all black people. And then they start, and after that, they start generalizing. But we need to do better as a people. A big part of it is that we got to get used to eliminating, destroying, eviscerating those coconuts because they're very dangerous. And we got to be okay with getting rid of them. And it also the coconuts who are going around shooting up our women, making the neighborhood unsafe for the women and the children. Them motherfuckers got to go to.
All of them.
And some of them are my family members. Fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them I grew up with. Some of them I grew up with. Fuck them. They got to go. The motherfuckers got to go. They making our job that much harder. Every day that we allow them to be comfortable in the neighborhood and just ride through and be dangerous in the neighborhood, it extends our fight, our overall fight. It makes it harder for us to fight. Imagine if you were in a boxing ring and your opponent was in the front of you.
and you were throwing punches and shit. Boom, boom, boom. And a motherfucker hit you behind your head. Start hitting you behind you. What the fuck? That's that black motherfucking coconut. You see him because you know what he about. This is your announced opponent.
So right.
This motherfucker. And all of a sudden, motherfucker, bam! Hey, you ain't hot, but you got to feel like this motherfucker, man. You throwing punches over here. You got to do this in. Do this, you know, like, God damn it. You know, so that's what it's like, you know, being, you know, in this space that we're in. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And if we're not careful, Will.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, those white boys ain't playing.
Not at all.
They out here in California, not man. All. They up in the mountains. They gathering up their guns. They got their 6-year-old daughter that know how to shoot. They got their 9-year-old son that know how to shoot. And you know what we doing? We down here on the internet playing with each other, talking about each other, playing around while they up there getting ready
and making motherfucking TikTok dance challenges and shit and videos. Yeah. Dancing, twerking, shaking our ass, all that old shit.
Yeah, we down here playing, and they up there really getting ready. They got compounds that they don't put together. They got food stored up. They got water. They getting ready for something, and we down here playing. If we not careful, and another thing we not looking at, I was reading something. They was talking about this private prison. They were up 27% last year and made $98 million, one prison. One prison. It's the new slavery, because if they can take my son, James' son, H's son, Brad's son, and put them in prison, they are assets. They look at this as assets now. We are being traded. And I don't even know. It's just so much stuff, Will. I don't want to go on a tangent. There's so much stuff that we should be mad about, that we should know about, but we're not seeing nothing. We had a guy on this show that he was one of the first cats out here to own the, you know, dispensary version. They put this man in jail. They kept the stores open and locked him up. They put, that's kidnapping. When you don't charge somebody with something, you just come and grab them and snatch their ass up. What is that called? They're doing it to our kids every day out here.
He was messing with their money.
Very much against us. We better get it together.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Y'all probably thought y'all was gonna come over. Y'all thought we could have a bunch of music questions for y'all.
No, my thing is like.
No, I think y'all.
No, we try to conversate about other things than hip hop or whatever. One thing I do want to say is, coming from that same background, we see a lot of shit that go down with the youth today. It's hard to control, you know what I'm saying? I'm knowing they rough down there where y'all at, especially where we are up in Chicago. From where we come from and our background, you know, a lot of opportunities wasn't presented to us, especially to myself coming up, you know, whatever, why I started gang banging and doing that route. Being the man that you are today, you faced whatever. How do y'all feel about when people say, do you feel responsible for how the youth turn out today because of them listening to us and what we went through as artists?
Yeah, on a personal note, I feel like whatever criticism we get, we need to get credit also. We need to get credit for all of those young Black people and Latinos and even white people who got it, who listened to our music and got inspired and went out there and made something great out of themselves. You know, like, people love to talk about anything that's wrong with the youth. They love to point at rappers for anything that's wrong. But when their kid is shining, when their kid get drafted into the NBA, NFL, or a Major League Baseball or whatever, when their kid become a lawyer, doctor, scientist, an entrepreneur, they want to take all the credit. They, hey, look at me. That's me. But when the kid come become a fucking junkie or a killer, you know, or they end up in jail or they end up on the internet twerking and bending over and shit and all that old shit, they want to blame that on rappers. Give me my motherfucking credit when your kid get that degree also. If you're going to give me, you're going to criticize me for the music when the kids out there fucking up, I want credit. And the rappers want credit when your kids are out there doing great shit. We want our credit. Give us our shit. Now, having said that, I do believe that all of us as artists, we have a responsibility, a greater responsibility than I even knew when I was making the music. I really didn't understand how important the message was. All I knew is that we're going to put some information and instructions out here. Information and instructions. I didn't know that some of the things that I said would actually not really benefit the community. But my whole thing was always to be a voice for the voiceless, to try to be that dude that would say the shit and stand up to the powers that be. Get at the bully. Like, everybody else scared to do it, I'll get them. You know what I'm saying? You scared to fight that motherfucker, I'll fight him. You know what I'm saying? And not just fight him, I'll whip his ass. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's always been my mentality. Like, so that's why I'm not afraid of the government. I'm not afraid of police officers. You know, I'm not afraid of any gangster, anybody that got a bunch of money or whatever, got goons or whatever, because I operate with the understanding that anything that a man can do to me, I can do to him. And I will do it. You know what I'm saying? And I've always, but I'm a nice guy. Anybody that if you really know me, you know I'm a nice guy. I'm a good guy. You know, and I do believe that that's one of the reasons why I'm still here to tell my story, because I was shown favor because I have a good heart. I was shown favor. If I was just a dusty ass dude, you know, and if I was a dude that just went in and just wreaked havoc on the community, I never gave back. I never tried to help anybody. You know, I don't think I would be in the position that I'm in today. But I sowed a lot of good seeds, and that's the reason why, you know, I'm still standing.
And you know, Will, I was going to ask you, because you mentioned the way you said, I'll whoop his ass. You ain't playing.
Right.
You could have been a professional boxer, huh?
Yeah. Well, I did have a few pro fights.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your record when you was out there?
I had a shitty record. I was 3-1.
Oh, 3-1. He's just...
Yeah, it was shitty. But the thing about it is this, man. I just started boxing too late. Like, I think that when you start boxing, you should be hungry. Like literally hungry, right? Like, I ain't got shit. We ain't got no house. We ain't got this or whatever. And I think you can come out like that and you're going to be more hungry. Like, when I started boxing, I was already into the money. When I started boxing professionally, I was already into the money. I was already making rap money and real estate money and stuff like that. So, you know, when I leave the gym, I'm not coming home to my girlfriend's house or some room in my mama's basement or whatever. I'm coming home to a fucking mansion. You know what I'm saying? It's a difference. It's a big difference because boxing is a blood sport. Mm-hmm. The type of sport, when you walk into the ring, you can lose your life and you know it in the back of your head. And everybody like, why the fuck would you do something like that? Why would you do that? You know, like, it's hard to explain, but it's something. Think about whatever it is that really gets you the fuck off. Will it really excites you. That's how boxing does for me. It's exciting. It's like when you're walking into that ring and it's like a warrior, you know, like ancient warrior, you know, Rome times. You know, you walk into the ring and people are looking in that pen and these people over here are for this guy, these people for this guy. You got people over here betting and stuff like that. And you walking into the ring and you know this guy is going to try to knock you out. And your job is to hurt him. And, you know, and in the back of your mind, you saying to yourself, I could actually die. I'm going to walk out of this ring alive. It's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of poetic, but at the same time, it's kind of sick, you know? It's kind of sick shit, but, you know, like, but it's boxing, though, is just something, man, I love the shit out of it, and people that do it, they know what I'm talking about. But everybody thought that I was going to be a boxer. When I won the Texas Golden Gloves Championship, everybody thought, okay, he's naturally going to become a boxer. Mm-hmm. And I was rapping around the same time. But I realized that I was really good at rap and I was really good at boxing. The girls like rappers, the girls like boxers. You can get a lot of money rapping, you can get a lot of money boxing. But at the end of the day, when I get through rapping, when I leave the studio or leave the stage, I ain't got no headaches. So that's how I chose rap over boxing, because I was like, long term, I had Muhammad Ali in the back of my mind, like, you know, like what had happened to him. And I didn't want to be that dude. Mm-hmm. I remember being in New York City one day and I saw Iran Barkley. And I walked up behind him and I said, what's up, Iran? And he said, he looked back like in slow motion, like this. He had to turn his whole body. And he was like, what's up, Willie D? It was real slow. His speech was really slurred. And he had, his last fight was maybe 2 years before that when I saw him in that condition. I was like, yeah, I don't want to be that dude, you know?
So, right.
That's a brutal sport. You know, y'all got a new podcast coming up, man.
Right.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded. What we going to get on there, man? We going to get some more of this good shit?
Information and instruction. That's all we've ever been about. That all that music that we did, it was always, okay, if we make a song and we finish it, like, okay, where's the information? Where's the instructions? If we don't hear the information and instructions, like, go back to the drawing board.
Put some
information and instructions. So that's what we're doing now. So this is more like an extension of the music, but in a podcast format.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we got a few more minutes, man. So I got to touch on some music. If I don't ask you no music questions, these dudes go flood my inbox. You had Willie D on there, and you ain't asking this and that. You know, how did you? Because I've never heard this before. How did you get hooked up with? Because you wasn't an original member of the Ghetto Boys at first. It was Pretty Red and the other cats.
It was Ready Red, Jukebox, and Prince Johnny C.
Mm-hmm.
And Prince Johnny C, which is a hell of a dude, you know, hell of a writer, underrated, out of New Jersey. So what happened was I signed to Rap-A-Lot as a solo artist. After I was there for a couple months or so, I finished my album. And Jay came to me one night and he was like, man, I got an idea. And what you think about being a ghetto boy? And I was like, nah, I don't want to be in a group. I snapped that shit out. I was like, hell, I shot it down real fast. I don't want to be in a group, man. I don't want to be in a group. And I'm saying this because I'm an odd person. So I look at stuff, I look at scenarios and what's most likely to happen. And I move a lot on most likely scenarios. And I was like, well, if I join a group, most likely to happen, what's most likely to happen is that we're going to break up. It's going to be a lot of drama and shit like all of these groups I've seen in the past. Now you look at the greatest groups, the Temptations, the Supremes, you know, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, all of them, you know, they broke up. You know, Rolling Stone, all of them broke up. And I don't like investing in something and not going the distance. Like, if I fuck with you, I'm stuck with you. I don't understand people who put a limitation on loyalty. I don't understand that. I don't believe that loyalty has an expiration date. So this is why I fuck with Jay to this day. You know, like me and Jay, we don't kick it like we used to. But if Jay called me right now and said, Will, boom, 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 what you need me to do, bro? You know what I'm saying? That's me. You know what I'm saying? Don't matter how much I give, what, how far along I get, that don't matter because it ain't about that. So for me, you know, so Jay came to me and he was like, man, you know, he was trying to convince me. And then I was like, yeah. And then he was like, do it for me. I was like, somebody, did he go to school for this shit?
Exactly.
That's simple ass statement. Do it for me. I couldn't refuse because this dude was investing in my dream. Nobody else on the planet was doing it. Nobody else on the planet was doing that. He was putting up the money. It's a lot of people can cheer and you know and pump me up and all that shit. But you know, he was gonna put the money up. He was putting the money up. So when he said it like that, I was like, all right. And then I'm thinking in the back of my mind, you know, plus, okay, that's two checks instead of one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote Do It Like a G.O. Mm-hmm. That was the first Ghetto Boys song I wrote. I wrote Do It Like a G.O. and I wrote Let a Ho Be a Ho.
Let a Ho Be a Ho, one of my classics. And, Do It Like a G.O. classic, but that's one of the classics.
When I wrote those two songs, those was going to be Ghetto Boy songs. He asked me to write. Hold on, I'm going too fast. Let me back up. Before he asked me to join the group, he asked me to write for the group.
Mm.
So I wrote those two songs for the new Ghetto Boys album with the old group. I wasn't
going right. to.
He come back to me and say, man, that's when he come back to me and say, a week or so later, man, I got this idea. Won't you be, you know, what you think about being a ghetto boy? And that's why now. So anyway, I agreed to be in the group. And because when he let his people listen to those two songs, he was like, man, yeah, this is it. They was going crazy. They were like, yeah, this is the direction we trying to take the group in. Because before that, if you listen to the very first Ghetto Boys album, you know, you can see a kind of Run DMC type vibe.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
They got the hats on, the gold chains, black, you know, kind of like Run DMC thing. But Jay wanted to be more authentic to Houston. He wanted more authentic to the South. Like, we got a different style. We all have basically the same plight, but we have there's some cultural differences based on where you are, what region of the country you're in, right?
Yeah.
What neighborhood you live in, there are some cultural differences. And Jay wanted to exploit those differences. So that's what happened. He wanted to, I guess a better word would be explore those differences. But he wanted to explore those differences. And so when I come out with the Do It Like a G.O., you know, I'm back like a rubber making trouble. I'm an assassin kicking ass on the double. No motherfucker alive gonna stop me, so fuck you and your goddamn posse. It's time to step on some motherfuckers. Man, fuck them hoes. These coasts ain't playing our songs. I want to know what the hell going on. I meant that shit. I was like, I want
exactly.
to be a New York DJ. Like, beat that motherfucking head in.
Exactly.
You know, like, because we playing they shit. We playing all of this New York shit. We ain't never hating. If it's shit is jamming, we fuck with it. So we playing New York shit. Why y'all not playing our shit? So I'm like, oh, give me my car radio, sucker. I'll kick your ass and take the motherfucker. Everybody know New York is where it begins, so let the ego shit in. You know, we acknowledge that. We recognize New York is where it begins. But let the ego shit in. So with that song, if you listen to that song is touch on a whole bunch of issues. And I just wanted to touch on all the issues that were relevant, you know, to trying to navigate through this life and dealing with all of the stuff the angst that you deal with, you know, being inside of a black body, you know, like black radio is being disowned, not by the other folks, but its own. They say, let me see, black radio is being disowned, not by the other folks, but its own. I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, the bottom line was that I was saying that how black radio, a lot of black radio stations at the time was not playing black rappers. It wasn't playing rap music.
No.
And I was like, nah, that ain't cool. You know, like, just like a lot of clubs wasn't playing rap music back then. A lot of R&B clubs wasn't playing rap music. They prided, it was black people, just like in LA. I know this was happening in LA too. There were black people that used to pride themselves on not listening to rap music. They'd be like, oh, rap music, I don't listen to that.
Exactly.
They thought it was almost like they thought they were special if they didn't listen to rap music. You know, they thought it was some type of degree or some shit. You listen to rap music? Hey, here you go. But check this out. You know, so our whole thing was like, man, this shit right here is going to be the vehicle that drives us straight up out of poverty. And so anybody that get in the way of this journey, they gonna get ran the fuck over. So we had DJs who would not play the music. So, you know, I was like an original rapper, like doing that. Walk up to the DJ, yo, man, play the song. Oh, no, man, you know, I can't play that. You know, I can't play it. This is R&B club. No, I can't play that, man. I'll get fired. Man, you want to get fired? You want to lose your job or you want to lose your teeth? It's simple, bro. Like, I was serious. Like, so a lot of people don't even understand that they eating because of the efforts that we put in. Like, we really took some penitentiary chances to get this music played.
Right.
And I understand that there is music out there that didn't really benefit the culture and really set us back and all that. But I don't believe that we ever made that type of music. I think if you listen to our shit objectively, you know, I think that you're going to get a whole lot more, you know, information and instructions to help you navigate through this maze, this weird ass place that we live in, than you would not.
Yeah, and you was responsible too for a big major part of the group. You told Bushwick to rap, right?
Yeah, well, with Bushwick, the trip part about it is that me and Bushwick had got into a situation, mm-hmm. you know, and the Bill was already with Rap-A-Lot when we got into that situation. So I come in later and signed the Rap-A-Lot. So we ain't really kicking it. We don't really kick it or nothing like that, but he's around, he's hanging around. So when we got ready to make the album, we go out to the ranch, Jay Ranch, and Bill is hanging out. Bill is in the car. He's in the van. We drive out there. He hanging out. We going out there to make the record for the first time. The first day that we went to go to make the record is the same day that I met Brad. I met him on the first day that we started recording.
Mm.
So Jukebox, he's going to be in the group. It's going to be me, Brad, and Jukebox as the three MCs, and Ready Red the DJ. No, we wasn't going to have nobody else in the group at all, no dance, none of that stuff. But Bill is hanging out in the studio, and about one day after the first day of recording, first and second day, Jukebox gets some information, where some personal information that makes him make the decision that he can't be in the group anymore. He don't want to be in the group. I think it was some situation about having a baby on the way or something like that. This music shit wasn't working out. So he quit the group.
Hmm.
So Bill is hanging out in the studio, just hanging out with a 40 ounce rapping Public Enemy. Yes. The rhythm, the rubber, without a pause, I'm lowering my level. He's rapping like that, you know, and I look at him and a light come on. I say, man, let's put Bushwick in the group. Everybody started laughing. I say, you see, that's what everybody else gonna do. They gonna laugh until they hear this gangster ass shit I'm gonna write for. So I asked Jay, if I write this form and he do it, is he in the group? And Jay like, oh no, man, Bill, what you think? So Bill like, I don't know, but I can try. I took Bill into the kitchen. We sat at the breakfast table. I asked him some questions about himself. And I embellished it with what I thought it might be like to walk in his shoes. Mm-hmm. And I came up with size and shit. 3 days later, he recorded it. He practiced it for 3 days. And on that third day, he recorded it. And shit, after that, it was on since. Now, if you listen to that first album, Bill is only on like 4 songs. Mm-hmm. That's because we was moving. We was under these strict time constraints. And we got him in there just enough to textualize him as a member of the group. And so that's how he became. When Bill recorded, he didn't even have a contract.
That's crazy. Now,
he didn't even have a contract when he recorded that album. But we knocked that album out in 10 days. The only song that we had already was, we had a shell of the Scarface song. You know, that song, Scarface, we had a shell of that song. And Ready Red put some stuff on top of it and just, took that thing out into the stratosphere. Because mm-hmm. I was ready.
That was the Scarface we heard in the album. Because that's when he made the transition from his name being DJ Action to Scarface after that, right?
But no. He changed. He went from DJ Action to Scarface when he went solo.
Mm.
After we did the first album together, we did a remake we put out in 1990 with Rick Rubin.
Yeah, the Griffin on the Other Level album.
Yeah, and then it was the We Can't Be Stopped album actually is when he changed the name, because his solo came like a couple of months after the We Can't Be Stopped album. That's the album with the 9 tricks on it. So he came with a solo about 2-3 months after that. And so that's how that happened.
All right, fellas, let's pay some bills real quick. We'll be right back.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Yeah, man. Y'all definitely, man, are major contributors to the hip-hop culture. Because I remember, and it's crazy for me to say, because I ain't that much younger than you at all. You know what I mean? But I literally grew up listening to the Ghetto Boys. Right. And when I listened to the Ghetto Boys, I saw what the Fifth Ward was. And that was what hip-hop did for me back then. You know, I'm a kid in Cleveland, right? And so I'm listening to Ghetto Boys, my boys in the car. We slipped it like this. We out there, you know, got pistols in the car and everything else. You know what I mean? And I said, man, this is what Texas is like. When I heard NWA, I said, okay, this is what Cali is like. You know what I'm saying? This is what Compton is like. You know what I'm saying? So it definitely gave you that that feel, man. And I caught, like to call it, like it was a real visual to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Y'all animated.
Ape know that better than anybody, because that shit that he did was so fucking graphic. Like you could picture. He don't get enough credit for painting pictures. When he rap, he paint pictures. You can see shit. You like walking with him. Like you be listening to his shit. You be like, hey, you think we ought to do this, Aaron? We should.
Exactly.
Like, Aaron, I don't want to go. He like, oh, motherfucker.
So Will,
you ain't going to try now.
When is the podcast dropping, bro?
Monday.
This Monday, man. Heard that, man. So what I want y'all to do, man, we got a few people actually listening to this show, man. So what I want y'all to do, I need all y'all to go out there right now. Go to iTunes, go to Spotify, whatever your favorite platform is, man, and find their new podcast, man, the Ghetto Boys Reloaded.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you, man. And we appreciate you, man. We appreciate Scarface. I think his phone dropped. He kept clicking out and clicking in, man. But we appreciate y'all brothers coming on, man. Anything that y'all need from us?
Yeah, I had to call Brad later when we get off. I hit him up and see what he up to. You know, that's him. We're out of tour with y'all, a gang of places. You know that's Brad for you.
Yeah, you know, and he going through it. Like I told him the other day, man, I really can't say too much shit right now because, you know, right. You're going through it. So I can, you know, like, you know, all right.
Give him a little pass.
But boy, you wait till you get that motherfucker pass. Well, I'm gonna be on his head.
That's right. That's for sure. Always.
Yeah, man. I know one thing, Will. I don't want to get y'all on here and talk about a bunch of music because people, you know, for the most part, know y'all history.
Right.
Y'all brothers, and that's what I was telling James earlier. I said, man, these brothers got a lot of shit to say about issues that's going on. So, yeah. You know what I'm saying? We definitely got to have you back on this motherfucker again, dog, because an hour ain't enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I wanted to hear about how they came with the Mind Playing Tricks song. I played that shit back to back in my Cadillac. And that shit did something to me. Like,
I'll give you the long story short for him. So, Brad, my Mind Playing Tricks was a Scarface record initially. Brad brought that song to the table. Brad was in the house with his grandmother, And his grandmother had misplaced something, and she said, you know, what did I do with such, such, such? And I can't find it. My mind's playing tricks on me. So Brad catch it, light bulb come on. So he writes a song, My Mind Playing Tricks on Me. He wrote three verses. If you listen to the song, Brad got two. He's the only one that has two verses.
Mm-hmm.
Two verses, and Bill had one verse. I got one verse. He gave Bill his third verse, and I wrote my verse. So, you know, if it was today, we probably just would have just used those three verses and said, that's cool. But I grew up in an era where you write your own shit. If you didn't write your own shit, you wasn't a real rapper.
Exactly.
So I write my own shit. I don't want this verse. I want my own shit. I'm writing my own shit. So that's how that came about. But, you know, it was brilliant, number one, for Brad to come up with the song. First and foremost, it's not even, it don't happen without his, you know, without his genius. It don't happen. And then it was double brilliant for Jay to say, I think this is Bill better Ghetto Boy out. Mm-hmm. Record. You know, this is cool, but I think it'd be better if it was a Ghetto Boy. And if you listen to it and you see you hear the different personalities, and each of us take you to a different place. You know, you hearing the paranoia, you hearing the mental health issues. There's a certain amount of disloyalty that you hear.
Right.
That stuff, all of that stuff is laced throughout that song, and you hear it, and it takes you to different levels. So when we did the song, James, I just did the song and left it alone. I didn't think the song, I had no idea the song would even be close to doing it. I didn't think the song was a fucking great song. I thought it was a good song, but I also thought the other 11 songs on the album were good songs. Because when I make music, when I write a song, I don't try to write hits. I try to write classics. I just try to write a song that you're never going to forget. So the consumer decides what's going to be a hit based on
volume,
based on sales. I got control of what's going to be a classic by what I put into that song. How I pour into the song, I decide if it's going to be a classic or not. So that's all I do with every single song. I just pour into it, whether I'm talking about, you know, riding on the, whether I'm saying fuck the KKK, my mind's playing tricks on me, or hey, watch out for them ball head hoes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm going to pour everything out into that song.
That's right.
And I'm going to make it a classic. That's the way I operate. So. Right. So I didn't know the song was going to do what it did. I did the song and left it alone and kept moving forward. And then when we did our test run, where we let people listen to the songs and they decide which ones they like, everybody was like, well, I like the whole album. Yeah, but which one you like the most? It's hard. If you had one song to pick and it was a life or death situation, which one of these songs would you pick? And everybody kept going back to Mind Playing Trick. And even then, I didn't think it was a great song. I was just like, well, that's what we're going with. That's cool.
Right.
Because I do a song, and I don't care how good it is, I start focusing on what I got to do next. I don't, like, really just bask and you know, rest on my laurels. So I just kept it moving. And then next thing you know, man, they sent it to radio, man, and we didn't have to go through the whole, that regular process of going through the mix and getting added and this and that. Nah. Mm-hmm. It was like day one, 50 spins a week on every radio station across the nation. And they played it for 6 months straight. That song was called A Phoner. It's what it's called, A Phoner in radio. A phoner is a song that makes the phone ring a lot. The phone,
right.
And that song researched real well too.
Every song that you have, if that phone rings, more than likely people are calling to request that song. That's a phoner.
And I'm going to tell you something else, Will, that was crazy about that song. It didn't have a hook on it.
Right.
It didn't have a hook. It was just...
Yeah. We wasn't really big on hooks back then in our day, though. We really wasn't. We just put the song out, just put the verse out, talk to the people, and keep it moving to the next. I'm not trying to think about no hook to keep you happy or whatever. I'm just gonna tell you something to describe what's going on, and we're gonna keep it moving.
Yeah. It's a feeling. It's a feeling whether you put a hook in the song or not.
Right.
The words. Whether you put, because it is a hook. The music is the hook, but it's a feeling whether you put lyrics in that space or not. And so we got a few songs like that. Some stuff, man, it's just, you know, you let the it's almost like 30 songs. The melody actually talks to you. The music speaks. It's like it's talking. It's like the music got. It's like the music come alive. The melody comes alive. It's talking to you. And that's what I mean by that melody coming alive and actually talking to you.
Yeah, that was an all-time classic, man.
That was a classic. Hey, Will, I just got one more question. Are we getting any more Willie D albums, man?
You know, I like to really do something because once an artist, always an artist. I don't care what eight say, he gonna always be an artist, and he always gonna really be in the back of his mind. I want to do one more. You know, I should
exactly.
That's gonna always be on your mind. So for me, I was like, I'm like, as much as I want to do one, and I got some great ideas, but I don't want it to fall on deaf ears. You know, I don't want to just go in and make an album because it costs money and it costs
right.
It costs money and it costs time to make these records. And I don't want to just do something like that. I don't want to just make a record just for shits and giggles. If I make the record and I spend my time and my money and my effort, I want people to hear it. And we're in an age right now where favor is not given to the best stuff out there. Like, I do believe that this generation is the first generation of music lovers who are not going to experience the best that generation has to offer. Now, they're gonna have some experiences. You know, there's always going to be a few artists, but there's always going to be some. But a lot of artists in this generation don't want to play the game. They got good stuff. They don't want to do mumble rap. They don't want to do mindless stuff. They don't want to talk about killing black men. They don't want to do that. So they might make music and they just make music at home, or they just go get a job somewhere and just say, fuck it. You know, I'm not doing this, you know. And so even on the R&B side of things, you know, they don't want to make music because a lot of the R&B artists ain't really talking about nothing. There's no substance. So a lot of artists don't want to play the game. They just don't want to play the game. So I believe that when we came out, if you was dope, if you was just a dope ass MC, it was going to be hard for you to not get on. If you was focused and determined to get on, you were going to be able to get in front of somebody and you was going to get put on. Now, not so much. They be like, you be like, yeah, saying something, you dope, you saying some dope shit. And they be like, yeah, man, but shit, man, you ain't killed with four people in the song, man. I need
right.
Can you raise your body count?
Yeah. you ain't popping enough pills or sipping enough weed or some shit. You ain't got on enough choke chains or some shit. Something's going on. So,
why y'all don't get together the old school and y'all put something together and show these cats that you don't have to talk about murdering your people on the song? And it'd be a good goddamn partying song.
But that's happening all around us. It's just that the people like us who talk that shit, that say, why y'all won't do it? You know, we need to come out and do it, show them. They're not buying the records. They just talk. They won't buy the records and they're not going to the concerts. So it's not even sustainable for the artist to go out there and spend that money and spend that time, because the people like us, we talk a lot of shit. Our generation, we always talking shit, but we don't back it up. Our asses, we gonna
When we get ready to listen to music, we're gonna go in there, dust off one of them damn CDs, stick that shit in the car. You're gonna be looking for somewhere to play the damn CD. You got a CD player in your car? You got it? Okay, come on. You know, because they already think they got the best music. They don't think any better music can ever be made again. So they already got their music, and they're not buying records, they're not buying the streams. Yeah, a few people do it, but it's not enough people that's doing it to make it feasible or even for practical for an artist to go in there and spend that kind of time and money and resources. It's not there. It's too big of a risk, right?
Right.
It's too big of a risk. So that's why a lot of artists just won't do it. For me, I'm at a stage in my life where time is everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. I look at everything that I do based on quality. Okay, I got this much time in a day. I'm gonna spend this much time sewing into my businesses. I'm gonna spend this much time sleeping. I'm gonna spend this much time. If I get a break, I'm gonna shoot over here and go see my aunt at the convalescent home, or sit on the porch with my brothers and drink, have a drink or something. Or, you know, I'm going to hang out with this woman, you know, for a moment or whatever. And then I'm back at it. And it's like, if I'm when it comes to like doing things that cost money, to invest money, in my mind, I'm like, how is this money going to come back to me?
Right.
If I throw 50 out there for it to be worth my time, I got to at least double up on it. I got to at least for it to be worth my time. So I'm not doing it like that. Like, I got to get it back.
Right.
I got to figure out, like, how I'm going to get this money back. Any money I put out, I'm looking at how do I get this money back. You know, if I get on a trip, if I get on the plane and I go to LA for 10 days and I spend 15, 20 racks, I gotta know while I'm out there that I got, you know, 30 or 40 racks coming in while I'm out there. I'm not going backwards, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know, definitely.
Yeah.
The backwards days is over with.
Yeah. Long gone.
Well, man, we appreciate you, big dog. And we definitely gotta have you on here again, man, because you are so versed with issues. I follow you on social media, man. I'm a big fan. And I saw maybe, and a lot of people don't know, Will, you was on this podcast stuff early.
Right, right.
You was on a podcast thing early.
You know, the trip part about it, that, and I'm going to say this, I think this is important for people to hear. When I first got on the podcast, and the podcast space was 2017, I think, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And no other artist who had names, like who was branded, was on doing in that space, right? And when I got in it, there were the detractors, the haters, the ones who don't really want to see you win. They would make little sly comments like, yeah, how you go from being ghetto boys to being on YouTube and da-da-da. They were trying to make fun of it, right? But I saw a vision. I was like, this is the future. Like, this shit right here, this shit is the future. And I was like, I'm going to jump on this shit right now. So I had to put my horse blinders on and do it just like this here. And them suckers come around, boom, 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 you know. So I was like building it at that time. And I'm seeing it growing. And then I get to a point to where I get it to 6 figures a month. And now, a little bit later, okay, you got the pandemic hit. Then all of a sudden, artists, ball players, a lot of people that make spotty income started getting into that space. But I already had like a 3 or 4 year jump on it. I was already ahead. So now it's cool to be a YouTuber. It's cool to have a YouTube channel. You know, it's cool to be in the podcast space. That's cool shit now. But when I first started doing it, you know, you had some people that tried to attach a stigma to it, right?
But I've always been the kind of dude, I've never been afraid to diversify. I've never been afraid to reinvent myself. And so, when I make these moves, I just look at it like I'm always like trying to play long ball. What's the long ball? Like, how do I make this thing work long term and keep it going? So when you trying to do something, especially anybody that's doing something right now, trying to get something going, or you got something going and it's popping, and all of a sudden these sucker hating fuck boys come out of nowhere trying to attack you. They're attacking you out of jealousy. They want your spot. It's like, it's that old saying, like lions don't really pay a lot of attention, to cats, right? Like the kittens, right? They're a fucking kitten. You know, the lion is moving forward. We don't even think about these fucking kittens behind us. But if they get close enough, I will bite a patch of meat out your ass. Get close enough. But a lot of these cats, but they know that, and they use the internet like, the internet is like the new phone, right? The internet is like, remember back in the day on the phone, somebody want to talk shit, they call you out, yo, nigga, I'm going to kick your ass. Yo, I'm
gonna right.
You don't even know who this sucker is. But
right.
He won't. You're like, well, meet me at such and such. And you fuck around, fall asleep waiting on this food. You know?
Right.
But that's how the internet is, man. A whole bunch of busters, a bunch of suckers who say things that they would never say to a man's face. But,
right.
But if you're going to be in this space, you got to put your blinders on and get what you want, what you got to get out of it.
Yeah, for sure. Because you, man, predate everybody, man. And again, we appreciate having you on here, big dog.
Absolutely. I appreciate y'all, man. I appreciate what y'all are doing with this Gangsta Chronicle. I remember when y'all first started doing, with James when he was doing it on the regular. I remember when it first started popping off, and I was like, yeah, they got something right there. They got something with that.
Yeah, man.
At what point did you come into the Gangsta Chronicle for?
I came in last year I started in.
Yeah, last year, and what was crazy is this. This is how that happened. I'll tell you. We had a guy, we had another personnel member that had some issues, right? And I was talking to A early on. He had came on the show, and I'd actually talked to James. I said, man, it'd be kind of tight. And I'm going to tell you what James said. I said, James, what you think about having A on here? James looked at me like this. He said, he was cool. I got to think on it, though.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you ain't gonna be on no gangbanging shit because I'm positive. I don't want no gangbanging stuff. He said, they didn't like that because at that point they hadn't really had no conversations, right?
Yeah.
And so I knew I was on to something though, right? Because me and A was talking about it, then the pandemic shit happened.
Yeah.
Then this cat that I knew was gonna tear his ass wound up tearing his ass. Cause I'm like you, Will. You think like me. I think ahead of time when somebody go do something, because they'll tell you what they're about to do all the time without saying a word. You just gotta look at them.
Right.
So I said, man, this might be about the time to activate that plan with Ace. So I talked to James about it, and James said, yeah, he was with it, right? You want to see how it go? And I'm going to tell you, we was talking to Charlamagne. Charlamagne had started, that's when everybody was calling us. Then we had every podcast network it was calling us at one time. We went and took some of them bullshit. Some of the meetings was bullshit. Some of them was cool. But me and Charlamagne was talking. He said, man, I just think y'all need one more dude on there, but y'all need like an artist. And I said, well, what artist you think about? And I'm thinking he gonna say somebody just corny, right? He said, man, I think MCA to be cold and the motherfucker on there too with y'all. And I said, I just smiled. I said, I had already thought of it. You know what I mean? So it wound up working out. It wound up being some good shit, man.
Yeah,
and we really fortunate. Yeah. We're looking fortunate. And one thing I always give James is props, man, because James has been consistent from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, to me,
it was all about Gangsta Chronicles. It was all, once I started talking and got used to it, and I seen the effect that it had on other people, then I said, this is where I need to be. This is my purpose. Right. So we had did a show with 8, and 8 came on one episode, and I gravitated to his vibe. He was okay. Hey, it's cool. I didn't know him because I had this this perception of ape men. Like, first I thought he was tall.
Mm-hmm.
Then, okay, he on this gangbanging shit. Let's see how it go in the when we do the interview. It went well. So yeah. I told Norm, man, I don't know if I could take him just saying cuz 300 times and an hour. And then we black people. I said I could work with him and I could work with anybody else, but yeah. I would fuck with Ape. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we made it happen.
Yeah.
You've been 100 every
yes,
since.
Indeed.
Right, right. It's beautiful to see, man.
Yes, indeed.
Y'all gonna do some big shit with y'all show, Will, because Charlamagne was telling me about it, man. And I said, when he first got there, I said, man, you've been making some moves. And I told him, I said, it was smart, man. And man, you know, you need anything from us, big dog, just holler.
Yes, indeed.
I appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me on, man, to talk about, you know, life. And also give a shout out to the podcast. I appreciate y'all.
Oh, for sure. And we also got on another note, bro, we got a radio show too. Come on every Friday night.
Yeah.
Terrestrial Radio. We in front of, I think, 5 million people, some shit like that. We on 11 stations across Southern California. So, yes, man, you might want to put some music out, dog. You got an outlet now.
We got you.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's very important, man, that y'all, coming back and grabbing that space, man. Like, and not because it's guys that are like us that helped build this landscape or whatever. And, you know, we really didn't know what we had, you know, we didn't really take advantage of some of those opportunities. So it's always good to see people come back and be able to, you know, basically kind of like capture that lightning in a bottle, so to speak, and get some of this, this culture that we have cultivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. For sure, man.
Well, it ain't too late if we all start working together and doing what we got to do, doing what we say we want to do. Man, we put that together. We got something.
Yeah.
So it ain't too late for you, me. I learned it ain't too late for none of us to really get out and do what we really want to do, our passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
To help our people. So yeah. It ain't never too late for us to put our heads together and do something now. You know what I'm saying? Now is where, this is when we need it the most, now.
Right.
So
well, we let's do, put our heads together and let's do what we got to do.
Exactly.
We ain't scared.
And for all our listeners out there, make sure, you know, we don't put the full episodes on YouTube no more, so stop asking me about it. Go to Pod TV. Go download the Pod TV app. The link is in the description. And we out of here. We
done. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find that purple mic on the front screen of your phone, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and a rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles are Norm Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Taylor. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt. The show's audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. Any questions or comments, hit us up, thegangstachroniclespodcast@gmail.com. Peace. Be safe out there.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.